Okay, just to let everybody know that this is going to be all taped on the radio station. Radio station KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio, that's 100.7. It will be an unedited version, so we get to hear everything everybody says, which will be good. We'd like to welcome everybody here today. So we'll get started. And take your cell phones off. That's one of the things we need to do. We don't need those ringing things. We are really happy to have a big crowd here today. And the reason we're happy to have a big crowd here today is we want you to become informed voters. That's why we have asked both Mayor Hedenskog and Catherine Wiley to come and talk to us. It would be really nice if people could base their votes on facts rather than emotion. So we want to get the facts out there to you. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about each one. And then both Ron, is it okay if I call you Ron instead of Mayor? Okay, thanks. And Catherine will do a presentation. I told them from 15 to 20 minutes. If they want to take less time, that's fine. And then we'll be doing some questions and answers. So today's the day you can get all your questions out. Let me just tell you about each one of these individuals. Mayor Hedenskog has been a resident for, he told me, 49.5 years, but I told him I'd round it to 50. This is in Curry County. He became a city councilor in 2006, and he's been the mayor since 2012. He worked at South Coast Lumber for 20 years. He's had his own construction company for approximately 7 years, and also worked for Richard B. Davis, that's a surveying company, for 10 years. Catherine Wiley is a retired registered nurse practitioner, and her education was at UCLA. She was the director of quality assurance for all federally funded Title X Los Angeles County clinics, hospital-based outpatient services, as well as freestanding. She was a clinical instructor in the UCLA Nurse Practitioner Program. She was a trainer in the Centers for Disease Control for Patient Flow Analysis. She was the director of 6 clinic facilities, including 4 LA County Comprehensive Health Centers. She was a member of multiple advisory boards, including LA County Health Department, California State Family Planning, Harbor and UCLA Women's Healthcare. So as you can see, I didn't even know all this about her. She's pretty well qualified. So we will turn the time over to Mayor Hedenskog first, and then Catherine Wiley will do hers, and then we're gonna give them each 5 minutes if they want to rebut each other, so that if they don't agree with whatever, they can put it out there.
I want to thank the Tea Party for having me. This is really, this is stepping out of my comfort zone, as you may know. This is an important time in the Brookings Harbor community. I'm very passionate about it, and I would like to acknowledge Catherine Wiley. She is a well-versed and experienced debater, and she and I have had opportunities to work on various sides of the table since I was on the Planning Commission in 2005. She has my respect. So today, if you read the paper, it stole all my thunder. We had a couple letters, well-written letters, one from Kelly McLean, one of my cohorts. And so I could really make this short by just telling them, just take a break, go watch the game and read the paper.
But not everybody reads, so
no. I haven't seen the paper yet.
You could Google it, but you have to read that too, I suppose. You could look at the graphics. So. This is my personal history of how we got to this point. Around 2004, Bill McMillan sees a vision of Curry Health Network expanding their services into the South Curry County. CHN constructed an urgent care facility on 5th Street to hospital standards and an emergency department in mind, not at the time. Around 2012, when Andrew Bear became the CEO, Gary Milliman, the city manager, and I met with him and asked him if he would partner with the city to pursue an emergency room at the 5th Street Clinic. Andrew and the city began monthly meetings. Our options were in those meetings to discuss standalone emergency room, split hospital with two campuses. That would be split the Curry County Hospital into two campuses with beds at each campus. Independent hospital and an independent health district in South Area. So, after many, about a year and a half, 2 years of us working on this, here were the answers we got. The state said there would be no standalone emergency room. The feds said, without any waiver, there would be no critical access hospital within 35 miles of another hospital. We're on both ends, less than 35 miles. The state said we could pursue an independent hospital, but it would be without critical access status through a process called Certificate of Need. But they would most likely deny it because they knew that it would collapse the economies of two pre-existing hospitals. After about 14 months, we were frustrated and met nothing but dead ends. We asked for help from the governor, and he sent down the regional solutions team that was led by Jeff Griffin, who is the Southern Oregon representative on Governor's Regional Solutions Team. And he arranged a meeting for us in Brookings, and in attendance in that meeting were representatives from Seattle and the Center for Medical Services, known as the CMS. We also had representatives from Oregon Health Authority, which was Dana Sulliver. Andrew Baer was there, I was there, and Gary Milliman were there, and we had a long meeting, of which the outcome of that meeting was CMS said there would be no critical access hospital or split campus within 35 miles of an existing hospital with no waiver, and no waiver for mountainous terrain road. The state said there would be no standalone emergency room allowed in the state, and we already had the answer on the independent hospital. Most likely would fail through the process. So, the city and CHN agreed to hire a lobbyist to help navigate the path to amend legislation. This was going forward from that meeting. The city and then Wayne Hellerstadt, who took Andrew Baer's place, traveled to Salem for a meeting with the governor's health advisor, Sean Clomer, to discuss an administrative rule change. We also met with the state senator, Jeff Cruz, and state representative, Wayne Krieger, to discuss a legislative change. With the governor's blessing, we opted to request an administrative rule change from Oregon Health Authority that would allow Brookings to have a standalone emergency room. The agreed goal was to open a door just wide enough to allow Brookings in. We were granted a temporary rule change in spring of 2015 that allowed CHN to get under construction. In August of 2015, we were granted a final rule change. First time in the history of the state, there will be a standalone emergency room, and the doors only open wide enough for Brookings and maybe a few other very rural communities. This is the conclusion of all this. By current state and federal law, this is the only option available to improve health services in South Curry community. The rule states that the standalone ER must be associated with a hospital in that county. Curry Health Network is now offering us to join with them in improving health services to the entire county. At-large seats, at-large meaning elected at-large, seats to the 5-member board of directors, starting with 3 seats that will be up for election in 2017. In the interim, they will appoint 2 ex officio advisory positions from the South Area. And those promises are in the ballot if you vote yes. They're in the ballot, and they're also been guaranteed by Resolution 15-06, which was passed by their board just recently. These are the pluses for a vote yes. A standalone ER with up to 8 23-hour observation beds. Lives will be saved. It is less than 30-minute air evac from the Brookings Clinic to health services in the valley, as opposed to about 2 to 2.5 hours the long route. For the first time in our history, the Brookings and Harbor residents will have a political voice in the operations of health services in our area. more convenient services. About 87% of ER patients are not admitted into a hospital. They're released to home. That's convenience. Our notable high amount of aging population in this area will have more local services and outpatient services. We will also include an addition of up to 25,000 square foot of facility for MRI, dialysis, and infusion therapy at the Fifth Street Clinic. There's more pluses. This will be adding about 40 jobs at an average of more than $50,000 a year, equals about $2 million into our local community. This will save part of $67 million that is currently going out of our area. It will save it back into our own community, into Curry County. A huge stimulation being mainlined injected. This is a statement for the paper, by the way. These are little jabs here. This will be a huge stimulant being mainline injected into the economic artery of the whole county. This health service development in the county could be the catalyst that turns this county around for both social advantage and economic. Final, in 2004, Asantia provided a study for our area to advise us of the path to improve health care. That study stated that it would not likely happen without being subsidized with tax dollars and most likely by partnering with Curry Health Network. We have recently obtained letters from Providence and Asante that concluded this same thing. The north end of Curry County has single-handedly carried the burden for health care services in this county for many decades. The way has been rough because of the loss of timber and fishing dollars that basically crippled the Curry County economy. In the past few years, they have boldly stepped up to turn health care around and took the steps with their own tax dollars to make that happen, both in north and south areas. Curry Health Network is now offering us the opportunity to partner with them. This is not a hidden conspiracy to take advantage of south area taxes. If the South County residents look this gift horse in the mouth, it will be a huge mistake. Instead of opening a door of new cooperation between North and South Curry County to improve health services, a no vote will only suffice to add to the rift that already exists in our county and cost lives and inconvenience. I know I'm less than 20 minutes. I have about 6 or 7 bullet points that I want to save for questions from the audience. My allotted rest of my 20 minutes you may give to Kathy Wiley.
My name is Catherine Wiley, and if anybody wants a copy of my background, they're available to you. I'm setting this up in the form of informed consent. And I'd like to give a brief introduction about that. Informed consent is an ethical concept that all patients should understand and agree to the potential consequences of their care. All 50 states and the federal government have laws which require informed consent. The bottom line is, failure to obtain informed consent renders clinicians liable for negligence or battery and constitutes medical malpractice. In 500 BC, Hippocrates advised physicians to conceal most information from patients. The belief was that doctors know better than the patients and therefore should direct the patient's care. In the 18th century, United States physician Benjamin Rush advised doctors that they ought to share as much information as possible with patients. However, in a lecture titled On the Duties of Patients to Their Physicians, he stated that patients should be strictly obedient to the physician's order. In this country, in this century, the American Medical Association stipulates that informed consent is more than simply getting a patient to sign a written consent form. It is a process of communication. This process of communication would clearly benefit responsible citizens in making informed voting decisions, particularly those decisions which are permanent and irrevocable. Despite these principles, there are those in this county on this annexation issue who believe you should only know what they choose to tell you or are compelled to reveal. They apparently believe they are helping us by presenting a decision for us. It's my contention that such beliefs are rooted in ancient history. I propose that the components and ethical concepts of informed consent should be required in virtually all significant, potentially life-changing, or permanent decisions. This includes the Brookings City Curry Health District's coordinated efforts to annex our area, which includes the Brookings Harbor Port District 97415 into the Curry Health District. Along with the elements required in an informed consent, actual or potential conflicts of interest should be revealed in any ethical process. And I wrote this before I read the paper this morning. I am not running, nor will I run for elected office. I am retired and have no intention of seeking employment. I receive no benefits from any of the parties involved. My efforts in gathering and presenting these facts are only for the purpose of attempting to provide factual, documented information to be considered in your decision making. I am a proponent of quality, comprehensive, accessible, cost-effective health care, and I believe we need expanded health care services, including emergency and trauma care. By the way, there are examples posted on the board which document some of the concepts I've just spoken about. The basic features of informed consent, the diagnosis. We suffer from inadequate health care service provision. This is a chronic, long-term condition, not an acute or recently discovered problem. Treatment. We need quality, cost-effective, comprehensive, and accessible healthcare services. This would include a small credentialed hospital and/or a licensed emergency or trauma facility. The only prescription or proposal being offered is a ballot measure to annex our area to the Curry Health District at a minimal permanent cost to property owners of 74.25 cents per 1,000 of our property taxes. This proposal was made by the City of Brookings and the Curry Health District without any input from us. The city requested annexation by way of resolution 15R1054, and these are in the exhibits. That resolution stipulates the requirement that CHD seek licensure of their clinic facility on Fifth Street to include an emergency department. It also includes the agreement to pay CHD's current permanent tax rate on all taxable property and to equally share the tax levy for the $10 million bond approved by the district in 2013 to improve their Port Orford clinic and support their new hospital. CHD's resolution 1506 to annex the entire area is, quote, for the purpose of continuing to provide top-notch health services and that it, quote, will facilitate the development of a hospital facility in Brookings, unquote. Their resolution also states that the City Council of Brookings can recommend two non-voting members to the CHD board in order to assure that the residents of the area to be annexed are able to provide input in the decision-making process. These resolutions were presented in May 2015 and approved by the Curry County Board of Commissioners in July. However, these resolution commitments are not included in the ballot measures. Intention of treatment. The stated intention of the ballot proposal is to provide expanded care, most significantly emergency services. These intentions are not supported by the ballot measure. The facilitation of a hospital has been eliminated or omitted. Risks of the proposed treatment. This annexation ballot measure will permanently increase our property taxes by 74.25 cents per thousand. This will never decrease, no matter how many additional homes or properties are added to the tax rolls. But the total amount charged will increase as property values increase and bond debts are added. It will permanently eliminate any other options for healthcare provision or participatory planning for healthcare services. It will permanently lock us into absorbing almost $47 million in existing debt, as well as any further debts that may be incurred if emergency or expanded services are provided in Brookings. There are also increased costs anticipated for the Gold Beach Hospital and other existing CHD facilities and services. We will permanently be paying for a hospital that we will not be able to reach when there is a major earthquake or tsunami. The added risks include the following: legal rights of a health district in Oregon, eminent domain, ORS, that's the Oregon Regulatory Statutes, 443.70. A health district may exercise the power of eminent domain and may purchase, sell, condemn, and appropriate real property, water, water rights, and riparian rights. Authority to issue bonds, 443.75. A health district may borrow money, sell, and dispose of general bond obligations. General bond obligations outstanding at one time shall never exceed 2.5% of the real market value of all taxable property within the district. It shall be permitted to have bonds outstanding in an amount which shall not exceed 10% of the real market value of the entire district. Tax levies. Any health district may assess, levy, and collect taxes not to exceed 0.25% of the real market value of all taxable property. A health district each year may also assess, levy, and collect a special tax upon property, real and personal, in an amount sufficient to pay the yearly interest on bonds issued by the district and then outstanding, together with any portion of the principal bond maturing within such year. Property is subject to sale for the non-payment of taxes levied by the health district, just like county and state taxes. Benefits of proposed treatment. The existing CHD will benefit substantially by a minimal increase of over $1.6 million per year from us, with no guarantee for us. The benefits to the city of Brookings of having CHD annex the Port District are not really clear. However, it is clear the city has been interested in annexing us. If CHD has an emergency room here, Curry General will be the primary ambulance destination if hospitalization is needed after assessment, for those who may view that as a benefit. There are no other benefits known at this time. That's because the current ballot measure provides absolutely no assurances for any expanded services or emergency room. Alternatives to proposed treatment. There are multiple alternatives, all of which have been available for years. Many are stipulated in the Oregon regulatory statutes. Options include annexation resolutions and ballot measures could be considered in the future. This would allow adequate opportunity for all of us to obtain and review documented facts, consider taxpayer input, and obtain the licensing required for emergency room and dialysis. What is the rush to annex really about? The Port District, that would be us, could work with Del Norte County to improve and expand health services. CHD could establish a hospital satellite under its own license and could have years ago, Oregon Statute 441020. The city of Brookings could create a healthcare authority to provide hospital facilities, ORS 441532. The Port District may have a hospital within its boundaries as long as it is not within a designated health district. The city could annex itself to CHD without including Harbor and the other unincorporated areas. Districts are not required to be contiguous. 198720. Our area could have its own health district, which could establish its own tax rate, elect its own board of directors, pre-approve any bond, loan, debt, and implement services based on its own decision-making. Risks and benefits of alternative treatments. The actual risks and benefits of alternative options would depend on the selection of the treatment. Considerations would hopefully include: do we want a small satellite hospital with an emergency room? We will not be able to get to Curry General, and most probably not to Crescent City, in case of a major disaster. The Asante study stated that an adequate hospital could be built in 34,000 square feet. The current clinic is 34,500 square feet. Do we want self-determination? The one and only option being offered, annexation now, is being misrepresented and pushed as though it is our only option, and this is our only opportunity to have that option. Do we want taxation without representation? CHD and its board built the Brookings Clinic in a wetland and is building the new hospital in a tsunami zone, significantly increasing building costs. After building the clinic, they purchased the Rush Surgical Center and Shore Pines Assisted Living Facility in Gold Beach. These purchases preceded steps to meet the healthcare needs of Brookings Harbor as well as their new hospital. CHD knew years ago that the state fire marshal could not continue to provide waivers for Curry General after next year, and a new hospital would be required. CHD taxpayers gave approval of the loan and bond measures and had input into the design and location of their new hospital. The current district is responsible for its business practices, resulting in enormous debt and continued expenditures beyond income. We have had no say in any planning or financing of the Brookings CHD facility. Further, we will have no say in their current plans for that building or expanded service provision. We will have no possibility of board representation until 2017. That would be after decisions on the Brookings facility were a done deal. Yet, we will be taxed in the interim. Do we want to absorb existing debt? CHD has a current debt of almost $47 million. They passed a $10 million bond measure to pay for improvements to the Port Orford Clinic and the new hospital in 2013. The costs of this bond have not yet been assessed. Projections indicate that the existing district would have to add approximately 70 cents per thousand of assessment for this bond if we are not annexed. If annexation occurs, we will be assessed for that bond in addition to the mandatory minimal tax base. The total will be almost $1 per thousand. These tax and bond projections were included in the resolutions, but omitted in the ballot measures. Do we want a hospital in a tsunami zone? The building specifications very well may result in a facility that can survive a major earthquake and tsunami, which will inevitably happen. However, who will be able to get there in time outside of Gold Beach? Financial concerns include the fact that grants aren't available for tsunami zone construction. Costs must be absorbed by taxes and bonds. This means that local taxpayers will be financing healthcare infrastructure and services which are or will be available to anyone, and continued payments will be required without regard to revenue. What is a reasonable share of cost? When the Brookings facility was proposed, the public was assured by CHD that we were going to have a hospital, then an emergency room. We got another clinic. We were told that the revenue from patient service reimbursements would be adequate to fund the facility and annexation would not be needed. According to the CHD audit, and this was just updated by information that was sent to me after 6:30 last night from CHD, the audit had indicated 53% of their total patient care revenues comes from Brookings Harbor. The new data indicate 58% coming from Brookings Harbor. Those revenues will increase with increased patient volume and increased individual health care coverage with no regard to the expanded service, without regard to the expanded services. There is no documentation of current revenues and expenditures related to the Brookings facility alone. I've written this because I had asked for information two and a half, three weeks ago, and it just came in last night. It was sent at 6:30 last night, and I do have information on that if there's time to give it. In the expanded health district, those documents are also included in the exhibits. Risks and benefits of no treatments. The issue of inadequate health care for our area have been well known and publicly acknowledged for well over a decade. Inadequacies include lack of emergency services, limited access, limited specialty services, and remote hospital care. This ballot proposal for annexation does not ensure improvement or expansion of the services our community needs and deserves. This is not the time to do nothing. Please take your time to consider documented facts. Your vote matters. Thank you for your interest, involvement, and attention, and thanks to Sue and Clyde for allowing this forum, and I appreciate your attention. Thank you very much.
Now we'll give Ron a chance to rebut anything Catherine said. You can step up, sure.
Boy, I dare anybody to take notes that fast to be able to speak about that.
I can give it to you in writing.
I don't have time to read it, but you know, Catherine, you're very articulate, and I've always said that. Let me just touch on a few things. I mentioned to you, this is not a conspiracy. No one's trying to keep any facts hidden. We only just recently received a ballot number. You can't do anything until you're on a ballot. Our ballot numbers were delayed, getting it through the entire government process has been delayed. It was delayed for various reasons, and it was delayed at the county level, but we've only had ballot numbers for just a few weeks. And so you've got to form a political active committee and all that has to go through the state. It's all regulated. And ballots aren't going to be out till November. So we've got from now until November to get all the information out. We're not trying to hide and hold anything back. Ask for it, you're going to be given it. I can guarantee you that the things that I've already discussed with you, you'll get to know them fully. A city resolution doesn't make any final decision. What it does is it allows city councilors, mayor, and city staff to work on a project. Opens up the purses if it has to open up the purse, but they don't have to come back and ask continuous requests from the city council to allow them to do things. They've now been given charge with the goal to move forward. That's the purpose of a resolution. It did not make any decision on this issue. This issue will be decided by the voters in a ballot in November. City didn't take anybody's rights away to vote, to coin an old phrase. 74 cents is the allowable tax rate. It doesn't mean that in the future, a board of directors, who is the governing board over the district, could not assess for less. But they will be allowed to assess up to 74 cents. Well, you know what? Come on. Take a look at this from the democratic process. You might laugh at that thought, but you also could be sitting on the board. Well, most certainly, if you're in the district, you will be able to be on the board. And those decisions will be made by the board, not by anyone else. That's an important thing to me. As I said before, this will be the first time Southern Curry County will have a voice in its health care.
Size of the board,
right? We'll be taking questions in just a little bit.
No questions yet.
There was mention of a tax without any guarantee. Ballot measure is making guarantees. I cannot quote it to you exactly, but I know I was involved in a lot of the writing of it when we worked with the lawyers. One thing it guarantees is that we will have a voice on the board. In the interim until 2017, we will have two ex officios on the board. So what does that mean? All right, so they don't get to vote on something, but guess what's going to happen in 2017 if they don't give us a thought over our issues on that board? All we've got to do is organize and vote in the members. 2017, three new positions be put in. As I said, I dare anybody to try to take notes on everything Catherine said. But
okay, it's Catherine's turn to rebut.
A couple of points, and I'll get these other boards up there before. You'll be able to see some of the difficulties in obtaining information. The reason that I started searching for it was a report that Gary Milliman made to the Brookings City Council. Evidently, that report was also made at the Gold Beach City Council. What is in that report, you can see on the boards what the variances are. The date that was reported was not correct. The participants were not correct. the director at the state level indicated, and you'll see that in her email, that in fact it was a discussion meeting, not a decision meeting. I have had an opportunity to talk on the phone with Jeff Griffin, and the sad thing about this is that when you just hear one side of a story, you want to be able to trust what it is, and I think that most of us would give the same benefit of the doubt. However, the fact of the matter is, Jeff Griffin, with the state office, had absolutely no idea of the indebtedness of the Curry Health District, nor did he really realize that the citizens of our area were not represented or consulted at all in the process. It was not an inclusive process. Couple of things. The resolution process, just to be very clear, the resolutions, and they're here in full glory, were what was presented to the Board of Commissioners at the county level to decide if a ballot measure should be done. This isn't anything to do specifically with the City of Brookings or CHD. It's what they stated to the county commissioners that would be done in this regard. But those issues were left off of the actual ballot itself. In addition, the county clerk has the authority to put out a ballot pamphlet so that every voter could see both sides, pro and con, whatever. There is going to be no ballot pamphlet at all. And on top of that, there are no policies and procedures for when the county clerk publishes a ballot pamphlet. So there's no opportunity for anyone to reach the voters in that manner with a ballot pamphlet. The salaries were mentioned at $50,000. In doing the math with the data that I had been given, the average salary for the proposed increase expenditure just at the Brookings Clinic would add up to $67,500 in salary and fringe benefits per person. The average salary in this county is somewhere around $30,000. So one of the issues that came up, and it's in their own audit, it clearly indicates that some of the salaries, and some evidently are union, some evidently aren't, some are consultant, some are from staffing agencies, and those things are expensive. I know that. And lots of places, including Sutter, use staffing agencies for nurses and physicians. But that's an awful lot of money. Critical access. A little bit about critical access. That word is being thrown around, and critical access has a lot of ramifications as far as being licensed and approved as a critical access hospital. It is a tremendous advantage to the people who own the hospital. That's why Sutter wants to become a critical access hospital. They get much, much higher reimbursement from Medicare. So, you know, this is your federal and state money, essentially subsidizing a business, if you will. However, what it also does is it raises the prices for everybody. So if people don't have insurance and aren't old like I am and on Medicare, your rates are going to be way higher than in a standard standalone hospital. Let's see, I think that pretty much covers what I wanted to deal with there, and I'd be happy to answer questions if I can do that.
Well, we've got lots. Oh. Okay, we're going to start with the Planning Committee's questions, and then we're going to open it up to the audience. So never fear, your questions will be answered. Some of these questions are going to be directed at Catherine, and some of them are going to be directed at Ron, and some of them are going to be directed at both. So, Catherine, you have been critical of the proposed expansion of the Curry Health District. Is there anything the district could do to gain your support for the expansion?
Yes, absolutely, positively. And I'm not going to guarantee my support or non-support for anything. I'll be straight up front with that. I think it would be a much more democratic process if the promises that are being made were done before we had to vote. This went to the Board of Commissioners in May, the resolutions, To say it was slow, I don't know how slow it was. I participated in hearings in June and July, and the Board of Commissioners passed it in July. And the first week of August, the ballot measures were written. So because there were timelines that had to be met to get it into the vote by November. It says right on the ballot measure, it could have been this coming May. So we could have waited until things were assured. We're being told now that perhaps licensure will be available in October. Maybe there's going to be dialysis. Maybe there isn't going to be dialysis. Maybe this, maybe that, 25,000. There's a whole lot of things that are being said, but nobody is requiring some of the people who are saying these things to provide the backup documentation. So I would like to see it first.
Okay, this is for Ron. The Curry Health District has a poor reputation for living up to its promises. What evidence do you have to make us believe that future promises will not be broken?
We have a clinic on Fifth Street.
That's true.
That was not paid for anybody in South Area. And that clinic is running in the black and making a profit. I think that Curry Health Network is the one who stepped forward to reach to us, and they've given us a guarantee by building that building, and it's in operation today.
Okay, moving on. Catherine, we understand that if annexation passes, Curry Health District will take on another $10 million in debt to expand the Brookings facilities. What problems, if any, do you see with the proposed expansion?
What I see, you know, having been in healthcare administration and doing, you know, significant evaluations in many, many areas, you know, part of what you'll look at is what your floor plan is and how your space is being utilized and how that functions best for patient care. I'm hearing one thing, there's 2,000 square feet being upgraded now. There's 25,000 square feet that needs to be added, which is mind-blowing to me, because you got 34.5 now, add another 25, you've got, you know, make your numbers. There's not an emergency room in the United States of America that has a 50,000 square foot emergency room. So I think that part of it is to, there was a great deal of sharing with the people up in Gold Beach about the style of the hospital and where they wanted it to be and so forth and so on. I would like to see some of that process here before additional debt is brought on us. And I think we should have a say in it. And as far as Mayor Hedenskog is absolutely correct, this clinic is making a profit. And that is why they said they were going to build it. This isn't, you know, some beneficent thing. It's not a nonprofit situation. According to the latest data I got, the plus after expenditures was over $400,000. That's nothing to sneeze at.
Okay, moving on. This is for Ron. Are you comfortable with the fact that taxpayers may be forced to pay for millions of dollars of Curry Healthcare debt? Is that not a high price to pay for promises that might be broken?
It's a loaded question. They might be broken, they might not be broken. So
that's true.
Okay. First of all, they won't be broken if we have a say-so on the board. And that's what we're being offered.
Okay. Now, this is for both of you. So, what are the chances of November ballot measure passing in Southern Curry County, and why? We'll let you go first, Ron.
Repeat the question, please.
What are the chances of the November ballot measure passing in Southern Curry County, and why?
Southern Curry, Brookings alone has 57% retired people, not necessarily over the age of 65. That number increases when you include the harbor areas. That's a lot of people in the age bracket that are going to need health services. This improved health service in Brookings has been long awaited for. You know that I've spent my time in Curry County, and my family has had its medical issues, and we've suffered with the lack of medical services that are close and convenient. I could tell you stories. There's lots of them in this room, and there's even more. This is going to be the best thing since sliced bread for Curry County.
Okay. Do you want me to repeat that question for you, Catherine?
You know, it's hard with a hypothetical. It's hard to say when you really look at the hard data, when you look at what is documented. To me, it's very hard to say, and I think that I can't say what's going to happen if it passes. My concern would be if it passes, we'll be right back where we were and yet further in debt. And I hear what Ron is saying, and I agree. I absolutely concur that we need better and more expansive healthcare services. But again, everything that is being said is not what is actually happening.
Okay, Catherine, you have done a ton of research to reach the facts as you see them. Do you see other public policy areas that you want to pursue in the future?
I'm sorry. That's rude. I don't mean to be rude. That's really a stick of mine.
You don't have.
I have been involved with public policy virtually all of my life, and an advocate as far as civil rights, particularly as far as I was an OBGYN nurse practitioner and dealing with the health and well-being, not to exclude you lovely men, but primarily of women and children, and that has been my life's work. That's why I volunteered on the Commission of on Children and Families here for over 10 years in Curry County. It's why I worked at United Indian Health Services. It is my life work, and actually, I'm hoping this is my swan song.
Okay, this is for Ron. As you know, by Oregon statutes, the CHD can exercise eminent domain, purchase, sell, condemn, and appropriate real property as well as water rights, and riparian rights. Are you not uncomfortable with this authority?
Why would I be? The city can do the same thing. Eminent domain belongs to jurisdictions.
In the city.
In the city.
Not the river. And not harbor, and not where I live up the hill.
We shouldn't mention the river.
That's my concern.
Okay, this is for Ron again. Boy, Ron's getting hit. What guarantees do you have that an emergency department in Brookings will become a reality if the ballot measure passes? It's not in the ballot measure.
One of my bullet points, at the Fifth Street Clinic, when it was built with additional room space to allow for an emergency room. Catherine is correct when she stated the OAR, Oregon Administrative Rule, that had an allowance for standalone emergency rooms, but OAR wouldn't allow it. This was really frustrating to us. That's when we went to the governor. The word came from the governor down through Sean Clomer, his administrative advisor, to change the rule and make it happen for Brookings. That's how the process started. They changed an OAR administrative rule to allow Brookings into this, open the door wide enough to allow Brookings in.
Okay, I'm
that emergency room, I'm sorry, I'm not, let's get to answering the question.
Okay.
That emergency room currently exists. It's already been remodeled in. I understand the sign is up with a covering over it, waiting to be pulled off when the state finalizes its last inspection. That's going to happen whether we vote yes or whether we vote no. Already going to happen.
Wow. Okay, so there'll be an emergency room whether or not we vote yes or no.
That's correct. That emergency room exists waiting for state's final authority.
So that's an important thing for people to know. Thank you. Okay, this is for Ron. Boy, you're getting hit today. What public input did the city attempt before supporting the CHD expansion?
I'm not sure I understand.
What public input did the city attempt before supporting the CHD expansion? Did you have a public hearing or anything like that before you supported it, or you just voted on it, or?
The city established as a goal probably back, I'm going to guess it was about 2008. Number one goal, to expand health services in the Brookings Harbor area.
So that's part of your strategic plan.
It's been our strategic plan for a great number of years. We haven't kept anything secret about it. We have pursued this, and when we passed the resolution and established that as a number one goal, That turned me and Gary Milliman, the city manager, loose to do all we could do to pursue it. And it's been a long, long road. I'm going to guess we've been at this for 3 years to get to this point where we could just get that administrative rule change.
Okay, I've got one more question for you, and then I'll hit both of you up. This is not for me personally, just to let you know. This is for Ron. How can the city justify putting non-residents at risk given broken promises by CHD? Is this not like the tail wagging the dog?
What broken promises?
Do you want me just to, I could just say personally, I sat in a meeting where McMillan stated that there was going to be a hospital in Brookings. I sat in a meeting and then it ended up, we will have an emergency room, and then it ended up a clinic. But I was in a room where he promised that.
I can tell you that Bill McMillan found the same thing Bill, not McMillan.
It's McMillan.
Was it McMillan?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. McMillan, yeah, okay.
It gets mixed up with Milliman.
Yes, yeah, you know, that's right. Bill McMillan probably made statements that he found out the same thing that we did through the process, that one, CMS would not allow a hospital within 35 miles, and two, the state wouldn't allow a standalone emergency room, and he got caught in those statements. This is what I remember Bill McMillan stating, that this clinic was being built ready for emergency services and to hospital standards. And I think that even fooled me into believing that he was stating it was going to be an emergency room and a hospital. I was frustrated, and that's why I asked this council to give us a resolution to turn me and Gary loose to find out where we're going with this.
May I have an opportunity to address that?
Sure.
Okay, I was involved. I have lived here not as long as Ron. I've only been here for a bit over 25 years. And the first thing that I did get involved with was there was an emergency preparedness plan. Back in 1998, there weren't even any tsunami signs or anything around, nor was there any real comprehensive planning, when even back then people knew that emergencies happen. I mean, we're all hoping that the big one doesn't happen while we're still here, but you know, there's no guarantee. If it's 100 days or 100 years, there's no guarantee in anything. I was at the hearings, and Ron can say I am a faithful hearing participant, and I heard the exact same things. The issue is that there could have been a satellite hospital of CHD. It wouldn't have been a standalone. And a satellite hospital, if it has, it also can have an emergency room. The existing hospital in Gold Beach has 24 beds. And it has a 22% occupancy. So if you look at where additional beds are needed, it's where two-thirds of the population of Curry County live, and where we can get to when any big emergency hits. If a logging truck goes cattywonker on Thomas Creek Bridge, nobody's going to be able to get up there. I mean, there are significant things to consider as far as just accidents that happen in any small town as far as preparedness, never mind the bridges and roads that go out north and south of where we live.
May I respond one more time?
You betcha.
I'll make it quick. As I mentioned, one of our options was a satellite hospital, and we thought that was the best option. Split the critical access license, put so many beds in Gold Beach, put so many beds in Brookings, hopefully more in Brookings because of the population's down here, and we could have had an emergency room or an emergency department in association with that split hospital. Fed said no, and it won't happen, I can guarantee you. Follow the trail we followed, and you're going to get the same answer.
That has to do with critical access. The feds only say about critical access, which we have already discussed.
Okay, I think we've covered that one pretty well. This is for both of you. Since Catherine spoke last, we'll let Ron answer this first. If the ballot measure does not pass, what health care alternatives do you see for our residents?
None.
That was easy. Okay, Catherine?
Well, I'm not so sure, because if you look at the finances, there are things that just kind of don't add up. to me. When you're looking at a hospital or a healthcare organization as a business, you're looking at trying to maintain your overhead by your service provision. That's one reason that the hospitals want to be critical access. They get a higher revenue. There are several things that are being said. Number one, that first of all, we are making money on the clinic here. If the services are expanded, there will be expanded revenues for the services here. One of the estimates that has been given that CHD expects to earn through patient care services is $67 million in patient care revenues that are currently leaving the area. I would very honestly like to see a cost and expense planning per patient visit and look at how it can be run more cost efficiently and meet the needs of the patient, of the patients and the community without guaranteeing it an additional $1.6 million a year in taxes. The other thing is that it seems that this county, the only way things are proposed to be done is by having property and homeowners pay for it. But property and homeowners aren't the only people who use it. It's a wonderful plus that in CHD's report, they provided services to people from over 800 different zip codes. That's a wonderful thing. But who's paying for it?
Okay, now we're going to open up questions to the audience. It looks like we've got lots of people with hands. This young man back here, we're going to get the microphone to you first. We don't want this to be a commentary, just ask a simple question. If you want it to go to both of them, that's great. Or if you want it to go to one of them, that's okay too.
Are you ready? Can you hear me? Okay. To begin with, I'm 70 years old. I know I'm not so old.
I'm real close. Does that count?
I have several questions, but one of the first ones I have is this hospital a corporation owned by private people, or is it a publicly owned hospital, CHD?
Are you asking Catherine, or are you asking Ron? Or
doesn't matter. They should be able to answer.
Do you know if it's publicly owned or private?
Curry Health District is publicly owned district, just the same as the Port District is a publicly owned district.
Okay, good.
Okay, the other question is then, can they sell to a privately owned business?
Could they sell to a privately owned business?
Well, certainly would have to go through the board of directors. I don't know the specific answer, but a decision like that would be made by the elected board of, not commissioners, the board of directors.
That's what bothers me. I've lived long enough and I follow politics. That's what bothers me.
Okay, do we have any other questions? Ralph, right there, close.
I've been told by a high-ranking first responder that currently the way it is, you can choose which emergency room you go to, whether you go to Gold Beach or whether you go to Crescent City, because they're both equal distance. I've been told that if this facility on Fifth Street becomes an emergency room, the ambulance will be required to take you there because it's the closest. And that's what they're required to do. And then once you're in the Curry Health system, your chances are going to be you're going to go to Gold Beach instead of Sutter Coast. And I have yet to find anybody that can give me a definitive answer on that, but I'm not going to Gold Beach.
So what is your question?
My question is, does anybody have the answer to that?
Do you have the answer?
Okay.
I have the answer. Go ahead, Catherine.
Well, okay. The
Oregon regulatory statutes are very clear on it, and I think that Curry Health District has been very open about it, and that is that if the assessment indicates that whatever your problems are can be treated at Curry General, that is where you'll go at no cost, added cost to you. If you choose or demand to go somewhere else, because they honestly can't kidnap you, and you want to go to Sutter, you would have to pay for that transport. The interesting thing to me, when you look at the fiscal things, there's a couple of variations on that. In one place, Curry Health District documentation indicates that there's between 2 and 6 people from the current medical center being brought to an emergency room on a daily basis. And we know they haven't been open every day. But if you do the multiplication, you've got somewhere between 700 and a little over 2,000 people going to an emergency room from the current clinic. However, their projected data indicates between 6 and 8,000 emergency visits. And it's not real clear whether that's up there and here combined, but in the budgeted item, if you take those numbers, the 6,000, 7,000, and 8,000 visits, there is a transportation cost, and somehow it works out to $90 per projected visit in their budget. All 6 to 8,000.
Do you have any comment on that, Ron?
No.
Okay, so here's another question right over.
Real quickly, there's one back here. So when the rumor gets out that we were holding hands, we're going to put it in the right context, okay, Ralph?
Okay, question over here.
My questions are very similar to yours. I've done a little research on standalone ERs. There are none in Oregon. But in Colorado and California, they don't take, if you're picked up in an accident, they're going to take you to this emergency room. When you're picked up, you have paramedics to stabilize you, and then they transport you to the hospital, trauma hospital. If you're saying that you will be transported to this emergency room to be stabilized, you've already been stabilized in the ambulance, I can't see where you're going to get much help there. If you really need further help, you're going to have to go to a different hospital. Then again, what you said, there's a problem with Medicare coverage. Medicare coverage in Colorado, if you, they don't take you to a standalone ER in Colorado or California. I don't know why they would in Oregon, because we haven't had one, but I'm assuming that they're going to follow that standard.
So do you have a question?
Well, my question is, do you know that?
Do I know what?
Do you know that the ambulance is going to take you to this ER, or are they going to take you to a hospital?
I will reiterate what Catherine said. The law is they take you to the nearest ER.
Mm-hmm. That's how it works in Oregon.
That's Oregon law.
Then I would have to vote against it, because I don't want to go to this ER and then have to be transported to another hospital.
One of the other things is the way that it works here, and I have practiced medicine in other states as well, Massachusetts and California, and it does. Things work differently. As I say, you know, some of my programs in Los Angeles were in comprehensive health centers, and they were JCO accredited. They were accredited just like a hospital, and some of them had surgical centers within them. So it works differently. But here, you're brought to the emergency room to be assessed, not just stabilized as far as whether you're breathing and your heart is beating, but to be assessed to see what your care needs are. And then your care needs, depending on what they are, you can be held and watched for observation, and you can go home. Maybe they throw a couple.
Okay, so if you're shot with a gun and you go to this thing here, and you need surgery, they're going to assess you, and you're going to waste all this time assessing
Depends on where the bullet goes.
Another emergency room to have surgery, because there's not, my understanding, there's not going to be a surgical center there.
But they also own the surgical center. No, I'm being facetious. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but it depends on where the bullet is. It's like a triage issue. It depends on how critical the issue is. They may stabilize you as far as bleeding and so forth and put you on a plane to Medford, okay, which would be an advantage.
Thank you, Kathy.
I mean, to further that, I had a heart attack June 9th. We went to the Fifth Street Clinic. I was treated wonderfully. They diagnosed me with a heart attack, they loaded me in an ambulance, took me to Sutter Coast. An hour and a half later, I'm in the hospital in Medford. Uh-huh. I want you to know what my bill was for transportation was $55,000. $55,000. And if Medicare, if they can't assure that Medicare is going to make all these coverages, furthermore, All these standalone ERs had additional fees added on, a service fee, and Medicare would not pay for those. That is correct. And I can't remember all, but you really need to look at what Medicare will cover, because you're going to be left out in the cold.
And that's going to be really important that you do your research before you vote. Okay, any other questions?
May I
respond?
There's
one back here.
Sue, may I respond to that for a second?
Sure.
1 second, sir. Lonnie, for $55,000, you're sitting here talking to us. Not happened for one person who showed up at that clinic having a heart attack by himself, because he, you know what? It says urgent care, and that could be confusing to people who think it's an emergency room. That was one of our issues. It could be confusing. This individual goes there thinking he's going to an emergency room, dies in the parking lot because he can't be treated there. We are making an improvement to that problem because it is possible, and Catherine's going to agree that you could be stabilized at this emergency room, be put on a plane, and you'll be in Medford in less than a half an hour with that
heart
attack.
That I can't guarantee you, but yes.
It's a possibility.
Oh, no, no, I mean, I don't know the time frame, that's all. But no, yes, no.
That brings up another whole issue of time. You're talking about time with this airplane allegedly going to be at the airport. Why isn't there an airplane at the airport in Gold Beach right now?
There is.
I didn't know.
And
okay,
there will be
questions.
Here because we've got questions. Letters from Dan Bratton already. He's going to.
Okay, we've got another young gentleman in the back that wants to ask a question.
Just one comment. I have both CalOR and Mercy Flights insurance. My wife has used the flight to Medford, and
there
the total
go.
Cost was zero.
Zero.
Put your money there.
That's if what the we total do. Cost was zero.
Out of your pocket.
Zero.
That's about
zero. There was no cost. It was fully covered between Medicare, CalOR, and Mercy.
But there was a cost.
Anyway, the question is, if we have a disaster like a tsunami or an earthquake, we could be separated in Brookings from Crescent City in Gold Beach, but we're going to be building an initial 4-bay ER that could be expanded to 8 bays, which are really 8 beds. Doesn't that look like an 8-bed hospital now in an isolated situation? If an earthquake or tsunami occurs, you would have the equivalent of an 8-bed hospital in an emergency situation sitting right in Brookings. Because those beds would be converted to be used by people who need them.
Your question is?
Yeah, what's your question?
The question is, do you believe that's correct? Because you were concerned there would be zero hospital care in Brookings. I contend that there
would be. I don't recall saying those words, but hospital care per se is more than 23 hours generally. Otherwise, it's considered outpatient. My point.
In an emergency with no option, would you think you would just leave the bed empty?
In an emergency room, even if there were other options, they might be utilized in that manner.
It's a tsunami situation. Nobody can get to Gold Beach or Crescent City. And you believe that we would, that the medical facility would only be allowed to keep people there 23 hours under a dire situation of being isolated medically? Probably not realistic. Do you think that's true?
You know, hypotheticals are magical, and I think that there would be a lot of circumstances that could be. The issue is that all of the visits are billable, and there are only certain billables that may be done. As far as the Oregon statutes or the administrative rules, I have not seen an exception to an emergency room being able to hold. Now, do I think that they would throw people out? No, absolutely not, because you're, as an ethical medical person, you really can't do that. But, you know, but yes.
I'd rather have 8 beds that might look something like a hospital in a tsunami situation than.
And I would like to see 8 beds also.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions?
I'd like to see 10.
Right up here.
That's okay.
Okay, thank you. This question is for Ms. Wiley. I understand that they'll be making the CSH, would be making a profit for every new service that they provide, I understand. So it would seem that they would voluntarily provide as many services as possible as they legitimately could do. And I'm curious, like, what is the basis for your insistence that that be in the ballot measure to make sure that it happens when it would be in their financial interest to provide the services that we are hoping for?
If it were in their financial interest and that were the only reason for doing this, as well as the health and well-being of our community, I don't see why a ballot measure would be necessary.
Okay, next question.
At this time, anyway.
Right back here.
Presently, like in the last 3 years in the county, the citizens voted down three property tax increases in the county. From what I understand, if this passes, the board will be able to increase that property tax assessed rate on our property taxes. Did I hear that correctly? So that'll take that process out of the citizens, away from the citizens.
So what's your question? Are we going to have a property tax increase if the measure passes?
Instead of the voters voting for a tax increase, this will put that process in the hands of the board to increase that tax rate.
Okay, so your question is, will, if this passes,
right,
will
then
the board,
the board
be able to add to the taxes on top of it?
We'll be able to increase the taxes, our property tax.
Or does it have to go to the voters? Ron, you can answer this question.
Voters Initiative number 50 in the state of Oregon that was passed by the voters doesn't allow anybody to put any taxes on your property taxes without a vote of the electorate, period.
But this vote means your property taxes would increase by 74¼ cents per thousand automatically and not go down.
Okay, that was my question. And the board can't increase that.
Well, no. In all fairness, they can't increase that. But if people vote for additional bond measures, they can. And there is already a bond measure that was in the resolution that was passed by them in 2013 that would bring what we would have to pay up closer to 99 and a few cents per thousand instead of the 74¼.
Right, and that's going to pay for the $67 million debt.
47.
No, that isn't going to pay for that.
Okay, other questions over here?
We're gonna take this one first.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Just 'cause I'm closer.
I got a clarification on this ambulance thing. I've been twice, once in May and once in June. Each time Calor picked me up, they said, where do you want to go?
That's correct.
I went directly to Curry General both times. No questions asked. I didn't have to go to the clinic first. So that answered that question. Now,
okay.
as far as Costco, if you have, well, they can't call it insurance, but for $45 a year, I was flown over to 2 years ago to Sante from down in Crescent City. I didn't have to pay a dime. And the insurance, I know this for a fact. I've seen it, two hospitals and emergency flight. Either Medicare or VA, or in my case also, because they pay more than anybody else. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon pays 25% to 30% of the bill. And somehow these hospitals make a profit on that. The rest is a write-off. So that's the way that goes. Now this $10 million bond, has that been floated yet?
Or no, it has been approved, but it has not been let.
But has been the due diligence done? I've spent 22 years in that business with municipal bond underwriter. And the due diligence years ago when I was on the pool committee, the due diligence people said no for revenue bonds. And I am sure this bond ain't going to be a revenue bond because this county ain't any better shape than it was 20 years ago. A GO bond is paid for by the taxpayers, the general obligation
bond. It is a general obligation bond.
Well, that means we got to pay for it.
That's what I just said.
Okay, yeah, but has that been done yet?
No, would be the extra 20-something cents on top of the 74-something cents.
Yeah. Okay, that'd be extra, so there. Now, this $67 million figure thrown that's going out, is that the billing amount or the actual pay to the hospital amount? Do you know?
You know, to answer you real quickly, I don't know, because the amounts have been 47 million, 57 million, 67 million. Today, I'm sure it was a typo, but it said that CHD said it was billion, okay? And I'm sure it wasn't billion. But it's like a lot of other things. If you look at the data, and I'll tell you, CHD has been very open for the most part. It's all on their website. In my seeking information, they have been the most transparent of any of the public agencies.
Not so much transparent. Is it the billing amount or the net amount that they receive from the insurance company?
I can't figure it out. Big difference. Some of it is that the debt is indicated with what the loans are, but then you have to add the interest. So if you have a $10 million loan, one of the interest rates was 23-something percent on a given dollar amount of interest. So it's very, I wish I had a pat answer, but I don't.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
There's a gentleman here that has an answer to that.
Yes, the $67 million is the amount of money that was done by a consultant that determined the amount of dollars that people in Curry County were spending on health care that was spent outside of Curry County, which means we're generating jobs and dollars and revenue at the rate of $67 million to someone other than people living in Curry County. What we're attempting to do with this effort is not get all the $67 million back, but is to get what can be done here back, which means at least a substantial portion of the $67 million won't be going out of the community. We'll always be going for tertiary care.
We're mixing apples and oranges.
The question was $67
million. Question was debt. We were talking.
Well, there is no debt number of $67 million.
That's what I said. That there's a debt number of $47 million. Some people have said $57 million. When you add up the interest and so forth.
Let me clarify this.
We have another couple of questions over here. This lady, young lady over here, had a question for quite a while.
There was some question about selling assets, and that cannot be done without a public vote. And I wanted to clarify that. The assets of the hospital cannot be sold without a public vote.
Unless they go bankrupt.
Okay, over here.
If this passes, does this bring the Fifth Street Clinic closer to being a full-fledged 24/7 emergency and hospital, where if you're treated, then eventually you're going to stay there and recover? If this passes, I'd like for both to address.
Dallin,
thank you.
Dallin, the answer to that is yes, with the exception of the hospital end. This will be a 24/7 emergency room with 23-hour beds for observation.
And eventually, will the Fifth Street Clinic be a full-fledged hospital?
Under current federal and state laws, never.
Okay, did you want to answer that, Catherine, or was it answered sufficiently? Sufficiently. Okay, next.
Never sounds pretty sufficient.
If this measure fails, is there a possibility of the current health district coming up with a plan where the southern area would be taxed less?
If this vote fails, Curry Health District is going to move ahead with opening an emergency room in this clinic. It's already there, it's already remodeled in. There will be no additional taxes to South Area unless we vote for it. However, everybody knows that emergency rooms are loss leaders in hospital care. If you don't attach and surround a package around it of services, you can't make it pay for itself. Curry Health District is stating that if they put that package of services around this emergency room, it makes it affordable for Curry Health District. In order to do that, they have to make more improvements. In order to make the improvements, they need more money. They're asking us to come into the district to support that, to support the emergency room. Without that, it's all in jeopardy.
It's the unknowns that concern me. If you knew just the 74 point whatever cents per dollar, it would be one thing. But It sounds like a great unknown in terms of what increased taxes would be.
Could I address, Judy, the question that you answered first? It is legal for a health district to have a split district. Okay, that is legal. How legally that would go as far as a board or as far as a separate taxation base, you have do not have that option if as a split district, which could be handled differently. Also, as far as the board, they've been a five-person board since they were incorporated. The Oregon statutes allow for 15 people. Now, I wouldn't recommend a 15-person board. It's too many people. But certainly there could be seven or nine, not just so that Brookings gets to select two people to sit in and advise, but maybe Harbor gets one, and maybe those of us in the unincorporated area north of town might get one too. So some of these things have not been publicly negotiated. It's been strictly the city negotiating. And, you know, for me, if the city wants to negotiate it and people in the city want it, they could annex themselves without the whole Port District being annexed.
Let me handle that one for a second. Resolution number 15-06 for Curry Health District, point number 5. To assure that the residents of the area be annexed are able to provide input in the decision-making process of the district upon annexation and until such time as the new residents of the district are able to vote in an election for board of directors of the district. If the annexation is approved and becomes effective, the board of directors shall appoint 2 non-voting members of the board of directors from the area annexed recommended by the city council of the city of Brookings. Such non-voting members shall serve until July 1st, 2017, in addition to the board of directors, shall meet at least quarterly in the city of Brookings.
That's just more of what I said, that they shall be selected by the city. And yes, all of the other wording, and it's on the board too. It's on one of the boards that I did. But it is the city who will recommend the 2 people that will be ex officio.
We will recommend a number of people. Curry Health Network makes the final decision.
A couple of things that I want to ask about. Number one is, this clinic was opened up, the Fifth Street Clinic was opened up without any revenues from us at all, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What it indicates
secondly, the clinic right now is in the black, making a profit for Curry General Hospital, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Third, we did have a health district down here, correct?
Never.
Yes. Wrong. Check your records. We did have a health district down here. We had a board, and it was dissolved. Okay, we can bring that back again. I guess my question is, really, this thing kind of circles around the idea of having, not an urgent care, but an emergency room down here. And what I'm hearing you say is that they're going to put in an emergency room whether we vote this thing up or down. Is that correct?
The emergency room exists today.
Here?
Already remodeled in.
Here?
Yes.
Is it operational?
No, it's got waiting for final state approval.
Okay. So we're just waiting on the state approval, and that's not going to cost us any money.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yes and no. Because there were issues when this building was first built, okay, regarding the wetland status, regarding the year-round creek, and regarding ODOT. And ODOT had issues with the zone change from multiple family units, multiple housing, to light commercial. And in changing the zoning in order to build this building, there was supposed to be a transportation study done to see how the impacts were on the roads and so forth. Obviously, with no emergency room, that really didn't include ambulance traffic or any of the other kind of traffic. And the issues regarding, it's Macklin Creek. It's a named year-round creek. It is supposed to have a 25-foot riparian setback. I haven't seen a tree on there in the last couple of years. And so there are other issues about licensing and certification and building a building and what that building is for. It's not a simple thing. And
okay, we've got another question back here and one up here. Oh, there's another one.
There's the one in the back.
Okay.
One of the main things I wanted to tell you is that if we do get dialysis here, it does not pay. If you want to check with all the dialysis units and stuff, we do not make money on dialysis. Okay, we're trying the best we're able to get that here. Okay, I mean, if you want to vote it down, that's your privilege. But you're voting out all of the different things that we would like to do.
Okay, any other questions?
That wasn't a question, I guess. Okay.
The comments.
Yeah. I would like to thank Port Commissioner Subo for addressing this very important issue and for coordinating this Tea Party meeting. Catherine Wiley's research of the subject and factual information is most impressive, and I would like to thank her and Mayor Hedenskov for participating in this debate. All I know, this has been an eye-opener. I am a little bit confused. I am. There's been so much information. There has never been an open house that there should have been for us, or a town hall meeting. My question is, and in effect, we are asked to permanently contribute a minimum of $1.6 million per year. And I still don't understand, is that going to be with assurances, without assurances? These expenditures outpace revenues is a quote from CHD audit for the final year 2013-2014. So they're stating that in their audit that expenditures outpace revenues. I would love to know what these expenditures are. And can we depend on current figures? What is CHD's actual debt? The pilot editorial today appears to be confused as to what the amount really is. We are about to vote in about a month's time, and we still don't have the exact amount. That would be, could it be answered by both?
Real quick. Yvonne, thank you for being so cordial. You are always respectful. And I have in my packet here, I've got all the financial summaries from Curry Health Network. I can't pass everybody out a copy. They're online. Their CFO is sitting here in the audience, and Catherine already said, they're very transparent. If you request the information, you will get it.
And the CEO is here too.
The CEO is also here. This whole meeting is directed across us too for making statements. So questions should be coming this direction. Thank you, Yvonne.
Are you the CFO?
I'm the CFO, yes.
Good. Then so, we can get it straight.
Okay. I'll hold this up close.
Closer.
Okay. Closer? Can you hear me? Okay. So our current debt, we did sell Geobond for $10 million. So our current debt is $27 million as of today. When we finish the hospital, it will be $47 million. All this debt is tied to assets that fund themselves. We've got debts in Shore Pines, the assisted living, that's $2.5 million in debt, and that pays for itself. We have the $10 million GO bond.
It does.
Well, this new hospital
is going to
cost $30 million in debt.
This is,
and that's going
so
to be paid over a long term. It's going
to
be paid over 40 years with the USDA. So the federal government is providing this debt to Curry Health District, up to $30 million to, this feasibility study we've done, all our debt is not new debt. It was studied by a national accounting firm. So the $47 million is debted. It's money that we can't afford to pay back over the next 20 years. So it's not new debt. And I've passed that all off to Catherine Wiley. So we will have $47 million in debt when this is all done. So, and if we do expand to Brookings, it'll be $57 million, an extra $10 million. But all that gets paid for by itself. So don't be afraid of the numbers. Debt is just a normal... Hey, Microsoft, they have billions of dollars. They have debt. Apple Computer, they have $1 billion in debt. And they could pay... They have $50 billion in cash. So the board decides if we want to pay down debt or if we want to create more... Let me say this one more time, one thing. We are a nonprofit. We do not are not out to make money. Every year, we could make money. We could make $1 million or $2 million a year. We could get rid of the OB service, not have babies in Curry County. That would bring an extra $1 million a year to our bottom line. That's not our job. Our job is to bring as many services as possible to residents of Curry County. So that's what we're doing. But as far as debt, I'm happy to pass out financials. I do it every month, and you're all welcome to them.
Can I ask you one quick question?
Sure.
I did read the audit, and part of the audit said that there was a loan out there for 20.86% interest. It was paid in June, but I'm just curious, where did you guys get that loan for 20.84%?
Okay. That was a lease for a nurse call system at Shore Pines, the assisted living. Mm-hmm. So the auditors put that as a loan. We considered it a lease. And, you know, 20%, we're talking about $47,000 on a $48 million company. So.
Well, it was the 20%
Okay. That's the auditors decided. To us, it was a lease, and to the auditors, it was actually a loan. So
okay, so I guess we believe the auditors are. Yeah.
It's such an insignificant amount compared to our operation.
That's small compared to the big.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Other questions.
Could I just make a comment about that?
Yeah.
You know. I appreciate you sending the things. But 34 pages arriving, being sent at 6:30 last night, didn't give me time to really look at things. There are several things in there, Ken, that are of concern. But the thing that I think is most helpful is the thing that I requested of Ken 2-3 weeks ago, whenever it was, that he did send last night. And that is, if we're able to look at the Brookings facility separate from anything else. Right now, most of their data and their financials combine the hospital and the Brookings facility, and it shouldn't be a difficult thing to separate that out, because you have to have separate billing codes for a clinic versus a hospital, as far as I know. You can't be billing from here as a critical access. So, you know, when you look at this and what it says on the building itself is that that private investors funded the building, the financing of the Brookings Clinic, and I guess that was through bonds also. But when you say $10 million for a bond, that isn't the only debt. You have interest on that bond.
Correct. Let me say one more thing, Bill. It is critical access status down here at Brookings on that clinic. We were grandfathered in. We are making money the last 2 years.
Then why couldn't we have a hospital if we're already critical access to it?
In 2011, when the clinic was built, and we took losses 2011, 2012. And so we are making a little bit of money there. But as far as pulling out those data, it's not that simple, because there's a lot of people that work in Gold Beach, like the administration, that have to allocate costs down to Brookings. There's doctors that work on both sides.
You do FTEs. It's not hard.
I do FTEs, but my salary, I allocate some of it to, so it's not that simple. But we've broken it out, and we do make a profit now. But we've invested $17 million in that clinic.
17. See, that's another thing. Some places say 13, some places say 14.
Well, it's $13 million in debt now, but the original cost was $17 million. So we did that $4 million.
Okay, any other questions? Let's just do one more. This is Ralph's, and then we're going to shut it off right back here.
I have one quick question. Those financials are available where? Online?
Most of them are online.
CurryHealthNetwork.com.
Okay.
That's where I got the audit, just to let you know.
Mm-hmm. The whole audit's there.
Yeah. All right, for the lady that was concerned about the dialysis center, they actually don't need an emergency room to have a dialysis center or an infusion center. They could have had them, they could have had them since day one, but they chose not to.
Okay, Ralph, do you have a question? Or?
The other thing is I've been to the emergency room at Sutter Coast, and on a number of occasions, not always for myself, but they usually have about five or six doctors there when you go in. Gold Beach, I've only been there one time, and that was because they were there and my wife had to be taken in. They had one doctor.
Aren't asking questions.
And it doesn't look to me like it's a very good trade-off. Is there going to be more staffing? That's my question. Will there be more staffing?
I can't answer that. Maybe one.
There would have to be more staffing.
That's the proposal.
There would absolutely have to be more staffing. And then, you know, again, looking at it as a business thing, if people are losing money on emergency room costs versus reimbursement, one of the things that other areas have done is they have expanded their outpatient services, because when you limit your urgent care services from 8 to 5 or 8 to 8 and don't have it all open 7 days a week, there are people who can't utilize, they can't access that those healthcare services during those specific limited hours. And so they utilize an emergency room system, which is way more expensive. So again, my hope would be if people had input into the planning for health care that we need here, that the urgent care would be expanded, which then would lower the number. This is what happens everywhere else. I don't know why it wouldn't happen here. It would reduce the number of emergency visits that would be necessary.
Okay, I think we've answered pretty much all of the questions. I've got a couple of announcements before we go, and I really appreciate all of you coming and just trying to get more information. Go on the websites, do more research on your own. I think it's important that you have a real good understanding of what's going on before you vote. Just a couple of announcements. There's a Vet Fest September 27th from 1 to 6 in the Azalea Park, and this will be like a music festival. And then next month, October 17th, Dr. Greg Duncan will be speaking. He's from Sutter Coast, and he's going to give us an update and some possible alternatives that we could have here. So thank you so much, and don't forget to feed the teapot as you leave. And get some refreshments.
Thank you very much. This is a little long for me.
Yeah.
Are we locked in?
If you like this podcast, consider donating something. The sooner we can raise the money, the sooner we get on the air. Please go to our website, kciw.org. Thank you.